Today we're going to be reading from Mark chapter 10, and this is found on page 1015 of the Church Bibles. And we're just going to be reading from verse 32 until verse 45. And for the next few weeks, we're just going to be doing a mini-series on leadership, and this is the passage for today. They were on their way up to Jerusalem, with Jesus leading the way. And the disciples were astonished, while those who followed were afraid. Again, he took the 12 aside and told them what was going to happen to him. "We are going up to Jerusalem," he said, "and the Son of Man will be betrayed to the chief priests and the teachers of the law. They will condemn him to death and will hand him over to the Gentiles, who will mock him and spit on him, flog him and kill him. 3 days later, he will rise." Then James and John, the sons of Zebedee, came to him. "Teacher," they said, "we want you to do for us whatever we ask." "What do you want me to do for you?" he asked. They replied, "Let one of us sit at your right and the other at your left in your glory." "You don't know what you're asking," Jesus said. "Can you drink the cup I drink? Or be baptized with the baptism I am baptized with?" "We can," they answered. Jesus said to them, "You will drink the cup I drink and be baptized with the baptism I am baptized with. But to sit at my right or left is not for me to grant. These places belong to those for whom they have been prepared." When the 10 heard about this, they became indignant with James and John. Jesus called them together and said, "You know that those who are regarded as rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them, and their high officials exercise authority over them. Not so with you. Instead, whoever wants to become great among you must be your servant, and whoever wants to be first must be a slave of all. For even the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve, and to give his life as a ransom for many." Amen. And may God bless to us this word today.
Please, in Mark's Gospel, Mark 10, reading again at 41. When the 10 heard about this, they became indignant with James and John. Jesus called them together and said, "You know that those who are regarded as rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them, and their high officials exercise authority over them." Here are the words. "Not so with you. Instead, whoever wants to become great among you must be your servant, and whoever wants to be first must be slave of all. For even the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve and to give his life as a ransom for many." Well, this week's been a huge week, and those of us who are political buffs had a real treat on Thursday night as we sat up and we watched the unfolding change in UK politics. And indeed, it is a new era. Whatever your political persuasion, things changed radically on Thursday. And the interesting thing was, on Friday, of course, we had the resignation of three key political leaders. Well, at least two of them were key political leaders. And it really was quite a sight. And indeed, for all of us, I think there is one issue that emerges through all of this. And that is the issue of leadership. You see it all the time in politics. Irrespective of what your political opinion is, it is clear when you see a good, strong leader and when you see a weak leader. And in the political parties, at least the main Scottish parties, they have all been unelectable at times. Whatever your political views were, the SNP many years ago were unelectable. They simply did not have it. They didn't have the organisation. The Conservatives were, and Scotland are now, unelectable. The Labour Party is going through a period just now, as it did under Michael Foot, where it was unelectable. Now, I make no political points. I don't do that here. But you know the point. And one of the things that makes a political party electable is leadership, clear leadership. And the successful parties, whether you like them or not, have that clear leadership. And you see that in the Church of God. Also, that leadership under the guidance of the Spirit of God is absolutely critical. That a church will thrive under good, clear leadership. And it will head into a demise if the leadership is poor. Now, there are folk in here know more than I do about the various styles of leadership. I think the business studies hire is on next week, and one of the questions may be compare and contrast the different leadership styles that you see out there. You've got, of course, the autocratic style, the big boss who lays down the law. You've got the laissez-faire style, don't you? The guy who just lets everything float. And there's one style, it's called the chaotic style, where things just happen. And then you've got the democratic style. There's all these different styles of leadership, and we've all been under them. Here we're starting a series of just four sermons on the biblical idea of leadership. And here we see in this passage, the Lord Jesus Christ demonstrates what we're calling paradoxical leadership. He is demonstrating a model of leadership that had never been seen before in that society of his day. And Jesus broke the mold. And of course, we're not just looking at leadership, we're looking at the gospel. And the way in which Jesus led shows us the very heart of the gospel. It shows us the values of what we mean by the gospel. It takes us right into the center of what we believe as a church and what will transform us as an organization, but more importantly, what will transform us as individuals. Because if we get this, we get the gospel. Now, of course, it's an important subject because leadership affects the culture of a community. The leaders in Southern California affect the way in which people behave in Southern California. The leaders of North Korea reflect the way the people behave in North Korea. Southern Californians are very different to North Koreans. North Koreans are not exactly Hawaiian shirt, flip-flop party people, are they? Because they've got a leader who's got issues, and his father had issues. The whole culture is repressed because the leadership is toxic, it is dysfunctional, and it flows all the way down. Now, and you find that in churches. You've got authoritarian churches with authoritarian leadership. And that transfers right into the culture, right into the DNA of a particular church. The same with a church with chaotic leadership. Isn't it interesting here? Jesus is in this particular context. And the context is of two church leaders who don't get it. Look at verse 34. They just don't get it. James and John, the sons of Zebedee, came to him. Teacher, they said, we want you to do for us whatever we ask. They just don't get it. And what are they saying? Verse 37, let one of us sit at your right and the other at your left in glory. This is the exact opposite of the gospel. They said, we want the throne. We want the position. One of us on the right, one of us on the left. You see, they're on a drug. And the drug that they're on is a drug that many of us are on. It is a drug of power. And the desire for power. Now, that drug can be seen in a little way. It can be seen almost in our own culture when folk are always on their phones. They're always looking. Oh, every 5 minutes, checking the phone, checking Facebook, checking all these things. It's a power thing, isn't it? The need to communicate. The need to be in control. The need to know what is going on. Many of us are addicted to that. It's a little power thing. And in an organization that has this power, we want to micromanage every single detail of the organization. And we see, this is what the intoxicating lure of power does. Now, notice a key thing here. They just didn't listen. They did not listen. Folk, those of us who are on power trips, we don't listen. Look at what the passage says. Jesus is talking about his death. You see that? 33, 34. They will condemn him to death and will hand him over to the Gentiles, who will mock him and spit at him, flog him and kill him. 3 days later, he will rise. Then James and John, the son of Zebedee, came. We want you to do for us whatever we ask. You see that? Jesus is saying, I'm going to die. I'm going to be hung on a cross. And the very next heartbeat, they say, we want to be great. They've not listened to what he has said. Supposing your friend says, listen, next week I'm going to die. And you say, can I get invited to the party you're having tomorrow? They just have not listened. Those of us who are intoxicated by power have this inability to listen to one another, but more importantly, listen to Jesus. Listen to what he is saying. Listen to what he is doing. And James and John were especially so. Now, why they were in this situation is interesting. If you read in Matthew chapter 20, I'd love to, I think it's a PhD thesis on James and John. What made them the powerful men that they were? If you look at Matthew 20, verse 20, it says this. Then the mother of Zebedee's son, she was called Salome, by the way, came to Jesus with her sons and kneeling down asked a favor of him. What is it you want? She said, grant that one of these two sons of mine may sit at your right and the other at your left in the kingdom. What a pushy mother! It's a classic pushy mother. She comes to Jesus, give the boys a top job. And so you're seeing here that the whole effect of family culture and the leadership mindset of the mother who isn't displaying humility, who wants for her sons at the expense of the gospel, at the expense of everyone else. She says, give the boys a top job. Now, James and John were biddable to this. Again, they had heard that the Son of Man will rise. And so when they thought of rising, they thought of kingdoms. And when they thought of kingdoms, they thought of banquets and thrones and all this stuff. They wanted places at the Messianic banquet. And so the other 10 heard this, and they want a bit of the action, don't they? We see that in verse 41. When the 10 heard about this, they became indignant with James and John. At least they had some embarrassment, didn't they? And then Jesus begins to teach. He says, look, there's a secular model of leadership, and there's my model of leadership. Notice what he says there. You know that those who are regarded as ruler of the Gentiles, that's the secular view, lord it over them, and their high officials exercise authority over them. You're seeing the language here. It's the language of maybe the kind of management situation that you're in, whether at home or at work. See the buzzwords there, authority, lord it over them. Now, these rulers had a huge ego. The copper coinage of the day had their faces on them. There was a little inscription on the coins that says of Herod Philip, he who deserves adoration. Now, that guy's got ego problems. He insists that on his coinage, he who deserves adoration. A lot of you are probably thinking, man, that reminds me of my boss. If he had coinage, that's what he would stamp on him. He who deserves adoration. And so what we have here, Jesus goes into that situation and he takes two very emotive words, slave and servant, and he employs them for himself. Now, again, we're in the introduction here. Let me give you a little bit of encouragement. The introduction is a lot longer than the sermon. In the situation of the day, There were two roles who were despised. One was a slave, one was a servant. Because if you were anyone in this culture, you really had to have a slave. You had to have a servant. It's a bit like some of the sort of emirate countries just now, the Saudi Arabia. I don't know how many thousands are in the royal family. And the tradition is that they don't do all the physical work. They've got all these people in, and they've got people. And that's exactly the same culture as we had here. The key folk would not have slaves or servants. And Jesus says, no. I'm inverting that. Slavery and service are noble. So this is a paradoxical leader, Jesus. What he does is he takes the classic management pyramid with the top guys at the top and those at the bottom. And what Jesus does was he inverts it round and he puts power down, not retaining it up. So that's the background. That's the introduction. Let's notice, why should we obey Jesus? Four reasons why we should obey Jesus. Number one, it's good for us. It's good for us. It's bad for us. Ah, that's correct. It's bad for us. Just in my notes, say very different to the PowerPoint. It's bad for us because if we retain power, that's what's bad for us. That's how the heading fits. So if we retain power and we insist in authority, we insist in keeping all these things, it's bad for us. How's it bad for us? Lord Acton famously said, I'm sure he said many famous things, but he's well known for one phrase, power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. And he always says, great men are almost always bad men, which is not necessarily the case. But he's right. Power corrupts. And absolute power corrupts absolutely. Why? What's the problem? The problem is spiritual. The problem is spiritual. Because we are, in our heart, Calvin says that our hearts are like a factory of idols. I don't know if you've ever seen, I saw a YouTube clip recently of the Tunnocks factory and making tea cakes, Tunnocks tea cakes, and man, it was pouring them out. Just the production levels were phenomenal. All over the world, millions of people eating Tunnocks tea cakes every single day, and it was just churning them out second after second after second after second. Calvin says that's what your heart is like, but instead of churning out Tunnocks tea cakes, it's churning out idols. It's churning out things that we worship. And every single one of us are religious beings. Everybody in the world is religious. So why is authoritarianism bad for us? It's bad for us because it tends towards the worship of ourselves. You see, they had become self-centered. And when we become self-centered, we do tend to worship ourselves. This week I got a flyer through the door Saturday. It was posted to me by a Christian conference in Glasgow. And the blurb said, I forget what the conference was about. It was about entrepreneurial churches. I copied down one of the phrases. The purpose of the conference was, quote, to unlock the entrepreneurial spirit within you, to dream bigger and achieve more. That's not the worst bit. It's about you, your purpose, your potential. That's what Satan said to Adam and Eve in the garden. It's about you unlocking your potential. I cannot tell you how easily I personally warm to that. That's one of the things that shows me what a huge sinner I am. Because it's not about me. It's not about you. It's about God. And we come together to worship. That's why this authoritarian model that James and John were seeking after and their mother was pushing them into was bad for them. So it's bad for you. But the second thing we notice is it's bad for others. What if you are in a situation where you are an authoritarian leader, or you are, as they say, under an authoritarian leader? Do you know what happens? It's really bad for you, because it destines us to a life of perpetual childhood. We never grow up. And sometimes folk are kind of like that. You know, dogs. I've changed radically over the years. I have been converted. I used to hate dogs. I now, probably just a little past, quite like dogs. And it kind of changes what dog I like, but the ideal dog for me would be like a Labrador puppy, a golden lab puppy, like, you know, the Andrex advert kind of dog, so cuddly and furry and nice. But if you could just kind of inject them with some sort of hormone to keep them puppies, you know, that would be ideal. And you'd have this perpetual puppy gambling about your toilet roll all day and playing and being nice. But that's not how it works. They grow up. Children are like that. Remember that little 2-year-old in a romper suit that you bounced up and down and cuddled and had those cherub-like cheeks and giggled in your face, is now turned into this, you know, 15-year-old person on the couch who just despises everything. You say, what happened? They grew up. And that's what we want. We want them to grow up. We love seeing them going through all the phases, from the petulant to the caring. We love seeing that. But an authoritarian leader does not allow for people to make their own decisions, does not allow people to use their own hearts, to love as they would want, to think as they would want. They do their thinking for them. And that's classically bad parenting, isn't it? We grow by our ability to make decisions, even wrong decisions. In fact, I think we grow maybe more through the wrong ones than through the right ones. I must have grown an awful lot in the last few years. You see where we're going here, leadership? Authority and leadership is bad for us. It's bad for others. Thirdly, it's bad for the cause. You see, James and John thought about them, and they didn't think about the cause. Jesus was coming to inaugurate a kingdom, the greatest of all causes. He's come to change the world. He's come to bring a new heavens and a new earth. Now, the problem was, look at verse 35. We want you to do for us whatever we ask. If you have that position, you immediately limit something, right? If an authoritarian leader imposes his or her authority on anything, that means the organization will always rise to the level of the leader. So when James and John wanted all the power, that organization would only rise to their level. Now, maybe James and John were very competent men, but they weren't all competent. The thing is bigger than we are. That's the point. And Jesus is saying, look, God is bigger than you are. The kingdom of God is bigger than you are. This is not the Jesus way, having it revolving around you. Now, the interesting thing is that even in management or business mindset, I'd be hopeless in business. Business, I'm sure, would go bankrupt within a week. But the interesting thing is that even in business, the best book on management I have ever written is a book by a guy called Jim Collins, From Good to Great. And he talks about these good managers. He calls them level 5 managers. And now, I hope this isn't boring you unduly, but I read something really interesting there. I put the quote up. He talks about great leaders. It says there, they are somewhat self-effacing individuals who deflect adulation, yet who have an almost stoic resolve to do absolutely whatever it takes to make the company great. Channeling their ego needs away from themselves and into the larger goal of building a great company. It's not that level 5 leaders have no ego or self-interest. Indeed, they are incredibly ambitious. But their ambition is first and foremost for the institution and its greatness, not for themselves. Now, this is not a management seminar. This is a church. But I tell you this, Jim Collins is getting that principle right from Jesus. And he's saying there that great leaders crucify their ego and the thing is bigger than they are. And he gives an example of one well-known CEO whose name you have not heard of, and that's the point, you've not heard of the guy. The thing is bigger than we are. And that's what he's saying to James and John, you've got to become a servant. Egos are brakes on development. Constant brakes on development. Fourthly, why have we got to renounce an authoritarian mindset? Fourthly, because it's incompatible with the teaching of Jesus. Let's look a little bit closer at the language here. It says here, the Son of Man did not come to serve, but to serve. When I prepare a sermon, I photocopy and I highlight interesting phrases. And an interesting phrase for somebody, it's kind of looking through the Bible, it hits them. Son of Man. Son of Man's really, really interesting. Because Son of Man from Daniel means, and some theologians say, Son of Man represents, quote, the highest, most conceivable declaration of greatness in Judaism. The Son of Man is a picture of awe, a picture of transcendence, a picture of wonder. The Son of Man is a term that is used of the most awesome being in the universe. And so what Jesus says of himself, this is why he gets crucified. The Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve. And this is radical. This is deep humiliation. The Son of Man became a servant of the Lord. Isaiah 53, the suffering servant. That's the way forward. Now, this is radical because this world says what's important are folk who are healthy, what's important are folk who are pretty, folk who are sharp, folk who are articulate, folk who really present themselves well. Jesus says it's the exact opposite. Those who are great leaders don't rise, they fall. And those who bring life die. I'm going to bring life, and I'm going to die. This is radical. Jesus, unlike James and John, who saw the symbols of the kingdom as thrones and position, Jesus says, no, the symbols of the kingdom are a basin and a towel washing the feet of those who are least. He came among us as one who served. This is who Jesus is. And so he comes to the weak and he encourages us to be that weak one. No bullying, no browbeating, no bossing. There is a service style of leadership. And there's an ego-based style of leadership. What about the church? The church. Some folk here have been bruised by the church. Whether the situation is more complex than we imagine, I'm sure it is, but we're bruised. Michael Green, he's got a great quote. Again, it's going to go up. Michael Green says, when we reflect on the history of the church, are we not bound to confess that she failed to follow the example of her founder? All too often she has worn the robes of the ruler, not the apron of the servant. Even in our own day, it can hardly be said that the brand image of a church is of a society united in love for Jesus and devoted to selfless service of others. Where does a bishop live? He lives in a palace. You go into old manses, what will you find in the wall? What will you find in the kitchen wall? Little bells. You pull the bells and the servant comes. Click your finger. In the society, who was the big cheese? The big cheese was the minister. One of the elite. One of the principal people in the community. Jesus goes to Matthew 23 and he looks at leadership. And he looks at the culture of the time, the religious leaders of the day. He says of them, they love the place of honor at banquets. They love the most important seats in the synagogue. They love to be greeted with respect in the marketplace and to be called rabbi by others. But you're not to be called rabbi, for you're one teacher and you're all brothers. Church leaders, don't follow Matthew 23 leaders. Follow Jesus leaders. Take the lower place, not the exalted place. Enable, don't bully. Put the power down, don't hold on to the power. And we know that the history in the church has been guilty of this. Those of you who have studied Scottish history, the clearances, the minister worked for the landlord, literally worked for the landlord. So when the landlord wanted his land for sheep, cleared the people off, God has said, go to Canada. Go. And that was the position. The people, because the minister said it, did it. They lorded it over the people. We see it in international missions sometimes. The idea that we've got the answers. We know it all. Because of our skin color, because of our heritage, we know it so much more. I'll tell you this. Anyone who's been to the church in Africa, anyone who's been to the church in Asia, and I've been to both, have seen there a church which is vibrant, powerful, autonomous. And it thrives most when the power is put down. Let's wind up. How does the passage end? Jesus says, and whoever wants to be first must be slave of all. I think we've got that. Verse 45 says this. And this is the gospel, folks. For even the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve and to give his life as a ransom for many. Think of someone in your life who has given you a lot. Think of someone in your life who has gone without so that you may get. Usually a parent, usually. Let me give you a picture of what Jesus' death on the cross did for us. Imagine that you are in a slave market and that you are up for auction. And the bidding starts. And they're bidding for you. And you look into the eyes of the bidders and they are hard, heartless, callous people. They're going to use you. They're going to bring you down. You say, are they kind? Are they cruel? Invariably, they're cruel. You look right into their eyes, look into their souls, and they are cruel people. And the bids are going up and up and up and up. And just as the auction is about to end, you notice a stranger. And you look into the stranger's eyes. And the stranger's eyes are kind. The stranger's eyes are just loving. And he makes a bid. And the bid is ridiculous. It's 1,000 times higher than anyone else's bid. And then you realize he's bidding on you not to use you, but to free you. He's bidding on you not to use you as a slave, but to have you as a son. He's buying you to make you free. That's what the ransom of Jesus is. Only the cost wasn't thousands of millions of pounds. The price was his own body. He died that you might live. I wonder this morning, does this paradoxical style of leadership of Jesus attract us? Well, may it not just attract us, but may it save us. And may we follow such a leader, the man with the kind eyes. And look at all the other folk who are bidding in your life just now. Look into their eyes. What do you see? Let's pray. Father, thank you again for the power of the word, for its clarity, beauty, winsomeness. Thank you for the Son of Man, for the ransom paid. Thank you for the power and beauty of the gospel. We ask all this in your name. Amen.